So you've decided to move forward with a new NHL arena complex. You have a budget in mind. You have some rough concepts in mind. Now you have to go out and get a partner to help design, then build your new building. Well, there are no shortage of companies and groups to help you. I was able to get some time with Joshua Boren, then of Isis Sports, now of Populous, one of the world's leading design firms with more than 1,000 completed projects around the globe and construction value exceeding $20 billion. Some of their newest projects include the Amway Center in Orlando, Console Energy Center in Pittsburgh, Soccer City Stadium in South Africa, and the London 2012 Olympic Stadium. Now, on the surface, hiring the right architect and consultant seems like a straightforward proposition. Joshua Boren is quick to point out that the sports architecture industry is a very dynamic business.
Part of it is the historical context and understanding the background of this industry. It's a very ancestral and a very unique industry. I mean, architecture in general, and obviously sports architecture even more so. There's probably only a handful of firms that really are capable of doing these buildings, and almost all of them came out of the same groups within Kansas City. So when these groups started, basically Kansas City is the center of intelligence and the center of knowledge for sports architecture, which seems interesting because why Kansas City? So basically what had happened is because of the fact that there are only so few designers and also because there's so few contractors and consultants that really understood the technical aspects of these buildings, the sight lines, how to accommodate all these multiple uses, get, you know, 60,000 people in and out in 20 minutes or whatever the time frame is, a lot of what happened is you started to see generic facilities being replicated in different areas where you was literally, okay, here's the model for how we've done it in the past. We're just going to drop this building here. And that's really sort of what happened in the early 90s when we kind of had the original boom. You saw a lot of NFL venues open up, a lot of NBA, NHL arenas. Many of them were very similar in nature and also in terms of design and look. And so, yeah, I mean, the ability to come in and kind of stir up the environment a little bit and come up with some creative ideas definitely leads to, you know, a whole new, you know, opportunity for everyone. And we're starting to see that now. And in fact, our managing partner is an individual named Dan Meese. And Dan was originally with a bunch of these groups within Kansas City. He'd worked for a couple of them and saw that there was sort of there was this lack of innovation that was starting to come to fruition as people became complacent in the venues and the actual design and construction of these buildings. And so he went out with two other individuals from within the group, within this group, or within these groups in Kansas City, and they spun off and started what was MBBJ Sports and Entertainment back in the 90s. And they were kind of one of the leaders in terms of innovation in the industry and really kind of shook things up. And since then, we've seen a number of groups, you know, what went from two or three people who had really been, you know, kind of this cartel-like mentality and protected these, these trade secrets, you could say, of the industry, had now, the guys were a little bit older and people were splintering off. And now you see a number of firms throughout the country, now internationally, that have this expertise, yet they all came out of Kansas City. And they're the ones that are trying to focus on innovation.
I mentioned a number of times the term multi-purpose when it comes to facilities. Joshua corrects me and says I'm using the wrong term.
Essentially, when stadiums were originally built during the first piece of the cycle, you saw venues like the Oakland Alameda County Coliseum, and the same with Joe Robbie Stadium, which is now Sun Life Stadium down in Florida where the Miami Dolphins play. These buildings were built as multi-purpose venues, meaning multiple teams, but that had different configurations. So you often saw baseball and football, which at the time made a lot of sense in terms of financing and building these venues and getting event days. But obviously, as we've moved forward and, you know, we look to increase fan experience and drive greater revenues, it's tough to, just throw a baseball diamond into a football field. Obviously, your sight lines aren't great. Your fan experience isn't as good as it could be. And so what you began to see is stadiums in the 90s or so becoming more single-purpose, though still multi-use, meaning a lot of these arenas were constructed primarily to house NBA, NHL, and concerts. And they basically were designed so that the sight lines and the fan experience was great for those specific events, but at the same time allowing multiple events without the ability to compromise those elements. So you saw a trend, and I guess the multipurpose is the word that's kind of thrown around a lot and can go a few different directions. But essentially, there were multipurpose venues, and now the venues today are considered more single-purpose but multi-use, if that makes any sense.
Joshua recently wrote a column for CNBC.com saying that we actually may be trending back to more single-use facilities.
It's interesting. I mean, you're seeing certain arenas that are built for one sport. They do have different sight lines. Almost all the arenas today are typically built to house both NHL and NBA. However, you know, an NHL rink is significantly larger than an NBA arena, and it does compromise some of your sight lines. So even if and Staples is a good example of that, even in an arena where the primary tenant's going to be an NBA team, you have to accommodate for the other uses, obviously, and design to that. So it makes things a bit more difficult in that you have to, you know, it's kind of a give and take, and you have to decide what you're willing to give up. And then now I think what you're referencing in the CNBC article is we're starting to see venues that are moving away from those, you know, multi-use, I should say, and becoming literally single-purpose. And a good example of that is Major League Soccer. Major League Soccer used to play all their games as they were being founded in existing football stadiums, and they would just tarp off the upper deck, which obviously isn't a great fan experience. The intimacy isn't there within the venue itself, so you're not getting, you know, the real feel of the game, the passion for the game. Instead, what MLS has asked for is they want, you know, they've made a couple requirements. They want, you know, an open-air roof. They want 20 to 25,000 seats, and they want natural turf. And so to do that, you essentially have to design a field that is, you know, that size, that capacity. You obviously can't play a football game in there afterwards. And most of those venues are designed to house concerts still. But again, you run into this issue of what else can you put in these venues when you're now getting them down to, you know, you need to better the fan experience and better the revenue generation abilities or capabilities. So you do need to make them specific to the sport they're having, yet, you know, you still need to somehow plan ahead to be able to offset the cost of these venues because they are quite expensive nowadays.
We talked earlier about where the team starts when it decides to build a new building, but where does the designer start? Here's Joshua Boren.
There's a lot of things that go into account there, obviously. You know, planning would be the first. Selecting the site's important as well. And sometimes, you know, we get involved where developers already have a site. Sometimes you get involved with the new municipality that just knows they want a new stadium and you don't know where it's going to go yet. In that element, there's a couple different stakeholders you're obviously dealing with. So the first thing is knowing who your stakeholders are, who's actually coming to the table, who's sitting down with you. And in that case, you know, what are your objectives and goals that you need to please of these buildings? Again, a private developer is going to want something far different than a city or municipality. When it comes to considering the site, it really matters in terms of acreage, land area, and then also what you're looking to develop again. I mean, there's really two models that we've seen, and I think recently we're kind of trending towards the urban development of these venues, trying to use them as, you know, drivers of larger efforts of revitalization. But really it comes down to whether or not you want to do a suburban versus an urban venue, and those are quite different. Suburban venue like in Detroit where the Palace of Auburn Hills is, which is a good, you know, an arena, it's a good example. It's, you know, it's about 40 minutes north of Detroit. It's up in the northern suburbs. It attracts more of a corporate crowd, and it is surrounded by 10,000 plus parking spaces. Same with, down in Texas in Arlington where the ballpark is and where the new, you know, building for Jerry Jones, the Cowboys Stadium is. Because they're suburban, they had quite a bit more land, and there's 20,000 parking spaces surrounding the facility, which obviously is a benefit for people driving to the game. In an urban site, that's not the case. You know, you have to deal with public transit. You need to be able to – there's more stakeholders involved in an urban development as well. And also, because these buildings no longer are standalone facilities, you can't have an arena because of the event days and because of the way it's used – on its own, you really are looking for an area in which you can have additional land for ancillary development as well, and you really want to do a mixed-use sort of development around these arenas in which game nights or event nights are driving people to a larger development and really creating a critical mass of people together. Other really important elements, obviously the financing mechanism is going to be very, very critical. in dealing with public entities, and I think Canada, you guys specifically have some issues up there following Calgary and Edmonton. You know, Edmonton seems to be in the forefront of the paper right now and discussing that, but where's the money coming from? Is it a TIF? Is it city-donated land? Is it, you know, there's all different ideas and ways to make this work, and obviously, you know, bonds and whatnot. You got to get creative sometimes, because anytime you're spending taxpayer money, you have a whole separate set of criteria that you need to address in the planning versus if it's a private developer. So it's an interesting give and take, and it really, at the end of the day, requires you to sit down with all the stakeholders involved. Even if it's private, that means the city, the developers, the leagues themselves obviously have a great deal of input into these buildings and really do drive a lot of these processes as well. So there's quite a few considerations to take into account. One of the things that we like to do is get everybody in a room together and basically what we call a charrette approach, where we literally sit down for a couple of days at a time and throw everything against the wall, get every idea out there and in front of all these different groups, and just start getting feedback and seeing what people want, what people don't like, what's favored, what's not. And then from there, we would begin to start designing and then, you know, working with whoever the client is, go back and forth and do, pretty frequent reviews. But it's that early on where you really do, you know, you want to get as many stakeholders as possible involved, and that, you know, saves you time down the road, because you're not going to hopefully have to deal with some of the issues that people bring up, and, you know, you can say this, and we talked about these, and we all spent time together, and we went through that. So it's, you know, it is a complicated situation, and because of the large, you know, the nature of these buildings, they have to take years to get, you know, get done. And when I say years, it's going to be 5 to 7 years versus 2 to 3. Construction alone will take 2, but, you know, Calgary, they've been talking about a new arena up there for a couple of years already, and it'll probably be 2 to 3 more years before anything really happens out of there.
So we have a design firm and design ideas. What next? We'll fill in some of those blanks after the break.